Hello everyone, welcome to Bishops in a Bottle on OWU Radio. Today is April 29, 2016 and it's 6:11 p.m. I'm Shamartha Rahman and I'm here with Orva Jarashi and Scott Payne, and welcome to our show tonight.
Just incidentally, this is our last show for the semester, so you won't be hearing from us for a while, whether that's good news or bad news.
Only time will tell. So, what are we starting off with today?
Let's start with our favorite topic this entire semester, Syria.
Well, yeah, there was another Doctors Without Borders incident where 14 people died, and we think it was in Aleppo this time. And, I mean, I don't know why that keeps happening. Clearly, the coordinates are there.
Also, there aren't that many Doctors Without Borders in Syria. One of the main humanitarian problems this entire time has been that there aren't enough medical facilities for all the injured and the dead. So what are the odds that this is happening so often, despite all military groups knowing where these setups are? It's horrible. That country is already suffering enough, and I don't understand why, like, these last bits of civilization have to be taken away from them.
Yeah, and there was another charity-run hospital in Afghanistan that got shotted, and 42 people died over there. And 16 people have been blamed for it. It was also the U.S. Army. Like, how do you not realize it's a hospital?
I think it was that the one that happened in 2015, because I think they just ruled that it wasn't a war crime.
No. This is 16 people who... Yeah, it's just 16 people who were, like, blamed for it, so it's not,
for
like,
what?
For a shooting of a charity hospital in Afghanistan.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, things in Afghanistan don't shock anyone anymore because it's Afghanistan and they're doomed anyway, so what's
yeah,
even
but
the
like,
point of
it? Syria is getting pretty bad, and aside from the Doctors Without Borders, that there's been, you know, right?
Yes, that's exactly what you're talking about. A deadly U.S. airstrike in Afghanistan killing 42 on October 3rd, 2015 was just ruled not a war crime.
Really?
Really?
How are they, like, blaming? How is it, like, 16 people blaming?
The incident... Okay, this is what the Pentagon is saying. The incident was caused by unintentional human errors, process errors, and equipment failures. Okay then, Pentagon. Clearly, technology hasn't advanced enough such that the margin of error for these things has gone down. So...
Yeah.
Thank you, Pentagon.
And the violence in Aleppo has increased.
Yeah, they're stopping the ceasefire in Aleppo also because Syrian government, i.e. Bashar al-Assad, is saying that there's too many terrorists in Aleppo and therefore we can't stop fighting.
Yeah, but
there.
There's been more than 200 people killed in the last 1 week in Syria. But then again, who's reporting
that? Who's going to take these people?
Yeah.
Where are they going to go?
It's really sad when you look at AP and one of the top news is how Texas schools spare no expense for huge football stadiums.
Oh, this is... Are they covering KDISDs?
They're saying that there was a school in Dallas in 2012 that spent $60 million in their stadium, but now Houston, is using $72 million.
Oh my goodness, $12 million more.
Those are actually two high schools that I know very well. One of those high schools, well, actually the stadium in Houston, I believe, is the KDISD stadium.
Is it your high school stadium?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
We share it, though, with 6 or 7 other high schools, but...
But is $70 million really justifiable spending, considering...
In Texas?
Isn't it government spending, considering...
Local taxes.
That's ridiculous.
Americans
keep complaining about paying taxes for... subsidies for alternative fuel. They keep complaining about taxes used in Medicaid and unemployment benefits, but somehow spending $72 million in a high school football stadium is justifiable.
$72 million would do so much for Medicaid, so much for renewable energy, so much for just general access to education.
We want to watch our high school football.
Well, I suppose there's a revenue coming from it too, so...
Yeah.
I mean, if there's that many seats, look at how many tickets. I mean, the tickets are sold commercially, right? Yeah, so that's money coming in. Yeah.
There's merchandise. It's not like...
It's still 72 yeah. million, though. It's the same as Ovu spending 72,000 on a labyrinth.
I mean, there are those ridiculous spendings everywhere, so...
I suppose. Whatever. If only we could tell people how to manage their money all the time.
If only. If we could tell governments how to manage their money. Well, Bernie Sanders isn't winning the primaries, so, like, what are we even doing with our lives?
Yeah, it's starting to look more and more like a Hillary Trump election.
Yep.
I mean, Trump's already the projected. Trump and Hillary are both already the projected
candidates.
So
Trump won all five of the primaries this week.
Yeah.
And he won them with higher polls than were even projected.
Wow. Oh, no.
This is very big for the Trump Trump ballot.
I'm concerned. I'm genuinely beginning to be concerned about what might happen this summer.
I mean, well...
Yeah, like, I don't understand really where this is going to potentially
and
go.
And as much as Trump seems to keep winning, as there seems to be more and more anti-Trump and, like, Trump hatred coming up, like... People are protesting in California right now.
Yeah, I mean, even in Chicago, isn't that why he didn't go to Chicago? Because of, like, the very intense protests and everything?
There were several other places. Yeah, just like Chicago.
Like, how is he winning if there's, like, so much Trump hate on the other front? Like, you'd think it wouldn't be that...
I think that no matter how much, you know, the general public hates him and finds him to be, like, you know, the devil or whatever, there's the genuine feeling that Bernie Sanders also brings, which is a feeling that this is someone who's speaking for the people rather than for Wall Street, big business, whatever you might think interests.
I actually met a Trump supporter in Hamburger the other night who tried to convince me how it didn't make economic sense that things were being outsourced. And I didn't want to say anything because it does make economic sense that things are being outsourced. But he went on and said that Bernie Sanders is too progressive. He won't be able to do anything. Also, he might die.
Where I mean, Trump isn't that
Trump
much.
Trump is 70?
Trump 69, is 60. 60
something.
Something.
He's in his late 60s.
He's in his late 60s. He's not, like, you know, exactly the Trumpy.
Spry chicken or anything like that. Yeah.
And, like, speaking of spry chickens and whatnot, like, Ted Cruz and Carly Fiorina, what are your opinions on that?
Are you saying they both look like birds? Yes.
It was such a last ditch attempt, though.
It's like, what are you even trying to get? Because Carly Fiorina had like 3% supporters to begin with.
They're grasping at straws.
They're just trying anything.
I think it's very like the fact that they let out both Kasich's campaign office and Ted Cruz's campaign office put out statements this week saying that Ted Cruz is going to be taking, Florida, Kasich is taking Indiana, and they're, like, divvying up the states between them, right? How is that Democratic, considering all they're trying to do is make sure Donald Trump doesn't win?
The Republicans are desperate.
I think it's a really interesting time to be alive and especially be young at this point because we might actually in this decade see a party collapse, which is something that...
That's the thing. I don't see the Republican Party backing Trump.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're going to try to do whatever they can to make sure he doesn't get there. They'll make up some excuse to, like, disqualify him or whatnot.
And, think of what the former Speaker of the House, John Boehner, just said. He's recorded as saying very, very horrible things about Ted Cruz, saying that he's Lucifer in the flesh. It's a quoted statement from John Boehner. And and swearing and frankly just frankly having nothing even polite to say about Ted Cruz. This is how much the Republican Party hates the person that they're frankly like
supposedly
hoping to back, because no matter how slimy and disgusting the party might think Ted Cruz is,
he's still better than Donald Trump.
In their eyes, he's still a better alternative than Donald Trump.
Also, Donald Trump just made his first foreign policy speech, which was very isolationist. And apparently the German foreign minister expressed like some concern over...
Everyone's concerned. I would be
concerned if I was a German foreign
minister.
Just
now I was watching an interview that he gave on Bill O'Reilly, and he's mentioning how, you know, he wants to break off from NATO. He wants to sever ties with NATO.
How is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization going to exist without America?
He wants to he says that, of course, his whole shtick is that Iraq was a mistake, Afghanistan was a good plan. He said if he was president back then, he would have put ground forces in Pakistan.
Oh my goodness.
He says that we now need to be afraid of Pakistan because of their
on Pakistan.
But like, who's gonna be America's ally in the region if Pakistan's gone? Because they have
if they put troops in Pakistan, Pakistan's losing every last bit of its sovereignty. If they put ground troops in Pakistan,
What about the whole? Like, I'm saying that sure, like the whole Pakistan being an ally has always been like debated, and a lot of people don't want it, and it's always been pretty wishy washy. But that's still America's main source of influence in the region.
Regardless of like, you know, that he's also considering ground troops in Libya. He's considering, you know, he's considering all these avenues of total war in the Islamic
world.
Well,
like, Trump's putting troops into places isn't exactly calculated foreign policies there.
It's not even military strategies.
It's just putting in troops everywhere.
Like, what are you trying to, like, point out here?
That there's no expertise involved in these decisions.
Yeah. Exactly.
These are not exactly well-thought-out, like, strategic decisions for, like, you know, military expansion.
But, you know, this is what whoever is voting for Trump wants to hear.
I mean, yeah, I suppose
that's
that
the
is
tragedy of democracy. Then.
When he plans out, you know, when he's planning out his speeches and when he's speaking from a teleprompter, he sounds sober and boring. But when he just goes up there and starts talking, like, people love it. We want to hear about how, oh, yeah, let's be afraid of every single country on Earth and let's nuke the living hell out of everywhere.
Also, I can't imagine Trump in any sort of diplomatic setting at all. Like, imagine Trump meeting Putin.
I don't know how that would turn out.
I feel like that would just be bad for Trump.
I don't know. I think Putin...
I mean, as earlier put, like, I mean, Trump, Putin would have Trump for breakfast.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, Obama is, say what you will about Obama, but he holds his own.
Yeah, and Putin respects Obama, like, to a degree, like, despite all the anti-American...
He might hate Obama, but at least he can respect him. Can Trump be respected as the president of the United States?
There's something... like different between impressing, you know, the people and impressing
an
individual world leader, and it takes a different kind of
charisma. Dignity.
Yeah,
Trump's undignified. I'm sorry, he is undignified. I can't imagine him in a like
crass is just
classy
probably the best
setting at all.
Yeah, like I think he's too crass to sit in on a
UN meeting or something.
Yeah, like, how do you see someone like Trump sitting there?
Considering he's talked about his genitalia on television.
I mean, this is the 21st century.
Still, though, he's a politician. He's running for...
I think talking about, like, you know, like crass subjects in live television or in speeches is.
The world isn't a reality television show.
Well,
yeah, it's not.
People that watch.
People who are politicians are meant to be respectful.
They're supposed to be, but that doesn't.
That's
mean
why the
I
term
are.
Political correctness exists. It's meant for the realm of politics.
And not, you know, classrooms and colleges.
Ouch.
Yeah.
With that low blow.
Yeah, like, but, I mean, I frankly think, I don't know how the whole idea of the Republican convention and, like, choosing their own nominee after going through an entire voting process is democratic in any sort of way. Like, I think it's wrong. And I don't know how the people are going to sit for it. And, I mean, let's face it, Trump is going to run independent if they screw him over, and then Trump is essentially going to win.
I mean,
apparently people are encouraging Bernie to do that, too.
Yeah, Bernie isn't going to do that, though. Bernie's also said that he's...
I think if Bernie did that, we would see an election like we did in the past in American history, where it would just be Trump winning.
Yeah, Bernie's not gonna run. I feel like he's too loyal to, like, he's too professional to pull that sort of a move. And, like, he's also said that he's not against the idea of being vice president. So there's always that front.
I don't think Hillary's gonna get Bernie.
Yeah, I don't think Hillary's gonna get Bernie, but, like, I don't think he's gonna run independent because he's already made that statement. And also just based on the kind of person that he is. Like,
yeah, I don't think he's gonna run independent.
Yeah, it seems too arrogant for Bernie Sanders. And Hillary Clinton might try to paw at the Bernie Sanders people by getting him as vice president, but I also...
I mean, it would actually help her, because if it's her against Trump, having Bernie's supporters would be a huge help.
Yeah.
I can only imagine who Trump's going to nominate for the vice president.
I was wondering if it'd be Chris Christie, because I feel like that's what was told to him. Like, I don't know if Trump is actually going to do it, but, like,
I feel like he's promising Christie.
Chris Christie has something there. Like, I feel like he wouldn't be acting like Trump's lapdog.
No, yeah, Christie's such a little pet right now. Like, it's
quite disgusting.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. But it's just, I don't know, the Republican Party seems to be falling apart slightly.
Yeah, I think that... You know, if things keep going the way they are, these fractures could just be irreconcilable. What would come of this, though? What do we think could come of the Republican Party dissolving?
I don't think the Republican
It's not going to dissolve. It might
change.
Factionize.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Like,
but change into what? Like, what do we see the future of the
Republican
Party?
I mean, you could have
being?
A really super right conservative, like, kind of Republican Party and slightly more moderate.
Libertarian.
Yeah. It could happen. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen this year. It seems unlikely.
Well, of course, but I'm saying in the next 10 years.
I mean, in the next 10 years... Anything could be different, though.
I guess.
Also, the Indiana governor is backing Cruz for president. So, okay.
Well, we know from text to us that a very good percentage of our viewership is going to see Donald Trump speaking in Indiana on Sunday.
Really?
Yes. A whole two people of our viewership, which is, I would say, about quite possibly over 50%.
Possibly 100% of our viewers.
Are going to see Trump. So this is interesting to look at Bishops in the Bottle's viewership and really where do our listeners lean? Where do our what kind of listeners do we cater to?
I think we just cater to ourselves here.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
It is interesting. I wonder, like, despite the whole Cruz, Kasich, Trump thing, I wonder where, like, did Trump win Ohio? No, Kasich won Ohio, right?
Kasich won Ohio.
So, like, of course. I wonder.
People do like Kasich.
People like Kasich here, yeah.
And, like, I wonder if this will, like, stretch along to Indiana, like, Kasich support.
Seems unlikely.
I mean, look at Pennsylvania, Kentucky,
look at New York,
Tennessee. You know, all these places bordering Ohio still voted for Trump.
I mean, look at New York, the supposed liberal, or, you know, conservatives and everything. I mean, even they didn't vote for Kasich and voted for Trump. But it's also like his home state, so. Mm-hmm. Where people should probably hate him more.
I heard.
I thought New Yorkers hated him.
He got his majority vote from the state, not from the city, but from upstate New York.
Upstate New York,
probably Rochester and places. Syracuse.
Yeah, it was usually it. I think he lost New York City.
Of course, thank goodness. Trump.
Trump.
Trump didn't lose New York City.
Like, he won in New York, but he didn't have a lot of support
in New York City. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, he lost, you know, whatever district, however that's divided, I'm sure. But, yeah, it's just, you know, tough times.
Yeah, like...
Bombings in Aleppo, you know, bombings in Afghanistan, finals week. It's hard for all of us in the world.
First world problems are real problems, guys.
We, all of us, all 8 million of us, 7.5 billion of us, I'm sorry, like, we're all struggling.
It's okay, world.
And
we'll get there. It's
there's
almost
only
summer.
2 months till the British referendum.
2 months till the British referendum, that's right.
That's going to be
the date? June what?
June 23rd.
June 23rd is when...
Oh, that's my friend's birthday.
June 23rd, and Orvage's friend's birthday is the day that... if they want to leave the UN.
EU.
Or EU. I'm having a, I'm so, having
it's
a
basically the EU
today.
And...
I'm sorry, everybody.
Britain's Are We Gonna Netflix and Chill?
Yeah.
Or nah?
Yeah.
Conversation.
Yeah.
Are we gonna keep doing this?
Or nah?
No, but that's the thing that, I mean, the argument really does float both ways. Like, the British whole nationalism is clearly coming into pressure with, like, the Brits feeling like minorities in their own island. But
how does it feel now, huh?
Yeah, like, how does it, I mean, like, yeah, like, you'd think they'd have enough nationalism going after 300 years of like, you know,
colonizing everything.
Yeah, so you'd think it'd
clearly
be,
not.
Yeah, and I just think it's just very...
I'm just salty. Like, they don't get to do this.
And it's not like the outpour of immigrants into Britain is going to decrease because of this. There's still people who would want to go to Britain regardless.
Yeah, it's been an attractive migrant destination and has been for a really long time.
But, like, apparently one of the arguments that are being made is, like, in terms of EU migrants, there are more EU migrants moving to Britain than there are British migrants moving to the EU. So it's not evenly distributed there because there are lots of people from, like, say, Portugal or Italy and, like, all the other pigs countries moving to...
The UK.
The moving to the UK versus the same number of British people moving
That's
to
true.
Europe.
The way the EU's labor movement is set up is interesting because the ASEAN regulates only is only free in terms of skilled labor movement versus the EU, which allows like even unskilled laborers to like go into a different place in the EU and find a job.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I think Britain's very... I mean, the Brits have always been known for their xenophobia, though. So this isn't surprising to anyone.
I mean, that's why... Like, I think that's just the attitude with, like, around the world right now. It's what Pope Francis beautifully put, you know, the globalization of indifference. I mean...
Yeah, they're not my business.
Yeah, it's just how it is. And, like, that's why him bringing in the 12... Muslim immigrants from Syria was such a big, you know, symbolic move for him to, like, you know, tell everyone, hey, look, it doesn't matter what people are, we have to stop being so hateful.
I just really, like, wonder, just how bad this is all going to start, like how bad this is all going to be before it gets any better.
We'll find out this November.
I mean, I feel like there's multiple crises at this point, and you can't deal with them all at the same time, unfortunately. And Europe needs some stability. The Middle East needs some stability before any of this.
The State Department now has a travel warning on Europe.
Really?
Yeah.
Like everywhere?
Like all of Europe.
I mean, it's not wrong, I guess.
Yeah.
But historically, Europe has been one of the safest, like historically in the sense of
The
Second World War, and like even during the Cold War, there wasn't a lot of like wars fought within Europe.
No.
Do we want to go into like slightly other news here? In Germany, they're doing trials for the Auschwitz guards there, and they're like apologizing to the people for not having done anything to stop it. And like, what do you think, like, after close to, 45 to, how many years has it been? That's 60.
55 plus 16,
71 years. Yeah, 71 years. These are, like, old people, like.
That's the thing, though. I was reading about the, you know how in Northern Ireland there was that a lot of, like, violence during the Catholic Protestant things and the IRA and everything. So the British government finally actually apologized to the people of Northern Ireland for all of the violence that happened. And I think this is just one of those softer ways of acknowledging a wrong and being able to move past it. Because, like, look at half these conflicts. People don't take responsibility. The people who've suffered never really hear. Sure, an apology won't change anything that happened, but
it's also 71.
Wait, I'm sorry. Are these guards apologizing? Is that what's happening?
At trial, yeah.
They're on trial.
Yeah, they're on trial, and they were apologizing to some of the survivor, like, you know, families of the.
Were they finally captured? Like.
Yeah, there were
decades.
Yeah, there
after this.
Yes, but also like that's the thing that these are.
Were they those Nazis that were hiding in South America?
No, these are like smaller officers. Obviously, these are guards at Auschwitz. So.
Yeah, so not people of real power even.
Yeah, so these are people who are taking orders.
You can't.
You can justify it like that. You can say that we were taking orders, and
I'm not saying it's justified. But again, these were people who were taking orders versus people giving out the orders.
Yeah, I think, you know, if this happened 2 years ago, you know, this is what happened was a tragedy. But these people are 90. What are they gonna do as penance?
I suppose
put them in jail. The only thing that you can do to these people at this point is just make them apologize.
Is that enough? Though, considering
do you want to put a 90-year-old in the electric chair?
When they did nothing, as hundreds and hundreds of people were put into the gas chambers.
I think it is
debatable. I do recognize that, considering how old they are, and like.
But just because they're old doesn't mean that they didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And that now they should be let go of.
Yeah, because they were in hiding. That in itself is a crime for not turning themselves in when
they should have or could have. I mean, okay, look, I get both sides of it.
A war crime is still a war crime.
Genocide is still genocide.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the things that's happening, like, in Bangladesh, too, that after 42 years of freedom, we're finally getting the trials for our war criminals and everything. And a lot of people are like, oh, they're just, like, old people. What's the point in doing these things anymore? But, like, these are people who rape, pillage.
These are symbolic
things.
There's
a certain kind of justice that comes with, you know, knowing that the wrong have been punished.
And that's why we set up these legal systems and judiciaries and everything, so that society as a whole can decide what's right and
wrong. And society can feel like justice has been doled
out. And so what's the current state, like, status of these trials? How long have they been going on? What's been...
Well, the person who's...
Is it one person that's on trial? Is it, like, three?
Let me pull it up. So... This is a 94-year-old former SS sergeant admitted in court Friday and that he had served in an Auschwitz death camp as an Auschwitz death camp guard, and he apologized to the Nazi Holocaust survivors looking on in a German courtroom that even though he was aware Jews were being gassed and their corpses burned, he did nothing to try to stop it. He said that he had never spoken about his wartime service in Auschwitz from January 1942 to June 1944, even to his family, but wanted to use his trial as an opportunity to set the record straight. And
so this is someone that's offering up his confession at his own will, which is fine.
I mean, like, isn't this the same thing as, oh, I'm gonna die anyway, might as well tell people sorry.
Basically. I mean,
this is, like, years and years of guilt and everything.
Yeah.
And, like,
I don't think
that makes it redeemable, like, considering, you know, what happened.
I think if you have 40, 60, 70 years to think about something that you've done...
Perhaps you come to a conclusion about it.
You've come to your own conclusion.
You also know that you're taking an easy way out now because you're going to die either way. So, you know.
And I mean,
it's not the most honorable thing to do.
Yeah.
If we want to discuss honor.
Honor here, yeah. I think honor would be a pretty far-reaching statement when it comes to Nazi Holocaust.
I suppose. Yeah. Talking of honor, though, and cheating, apparently there's a Republican candidate who is now concerned about cheating in SATs, and he wants Homeland Security to deal with it.
What?
Like cheating in the SAT abroad, especially, like, in Asia and stuff, and he wants Homeland Security to come up with a comprehensive plan because the integrity of the U.S. foreign student base should not be compromised by underachievers.
Maybe you should fix the education system in America before you start arresting. Yeah, I mean,
like, maybe you should figure out cheating in SATs in America first.
Considering people go in and put in other people's names and...
Yeah, there was... I remember when I was in high school, I watched a 60 Minutes on this, and it's very, the lengths that
some people
go to cheat on standardized tests in America is ridiculous, and the lengths that the education board in America goes to stop this are ridiculous as well. But what is just insane is that, you know, there are always going to be
people that find loopholes.
Yeah, more and more people that find ways to cheat.
Standardized tests themselves have always been dubious quality, controversy.
Colleges now are starting to regard it with less and less.
True, especially like liberal arts.
Yeah,
like OWU.
OWU doesn't even need you to send in your
standardized test
after a certain GPA.
Yeah, unless you're applying for special scholarships.
Yeah, if you're applying for like a higher scholarship, then you don't need to send in.
Yeah,
your
and that's
SATs.
The thing. Like, clearly, this one generalized test can be a measure of everyone's intelligence.
Considering we're talking about things like neurodiversity. No.
Who's the Republican nominee?
It's just it's a congressman. It's a Republican congressman from Arizona called something Salmon.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's...
Matt Salmon. Mm. Well, interesting name.
I mean, do you guys, like, being international students... Have you ever heard of people in your countries cheating?
Sure, a lot. Back home...
It happens quite often.
I'm sure it happens everywhere.
Look, the SAT rules of cheating are also really strange because one of their rules is that if you go back to a section after the time is done,
that's cheating.
So you can technically get disqualified.
Yeah.
And our education systems aren't set up like that where we have to, like... move on from a section in a given period of time. Like, we just have an entire exam.
There's no exams. Yeah. And this is a unique thing to ACTs and SATs. This is not something how...
I've never understood the reasoning behind it. It's a four-hour-long exam. Let people do it however they want
to do it. I never understood it either. And
especially, like, with the essay, because it's 25 minutes long. And
they're not expecting you to dole out a creative... piece. They want
basic
specific
functionality.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the exact format of the SAT essay because I remember my teacher was telling me back in high school that, you know what, it doesn't need to be creative. You see the question, you need to do introduction, example, positive, negative, conclusion. That's your SAT essay.
That's it. And that's why, now after this little, like, 10 or 15 year experiment with an essay portion of ACTs and SATs, they're now starting to cut this from the requirements. The SATs are going back to a 1600 point.
The writing section is now optional.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand. Okay, like, coming from, like, a non...
Also, most universities haven't been considering the writing section.
Yeah,
the SATs.
Look at critical reading and math anyway. And, like,
I don't think Ohio Wesley... I don't even think I
no,
had
it doesn't.
To... They didn't care about my writings for the ACTs.
No, but, like, what that whole page-turning thing is so odd because it's, like, some people clearly are slower readers than others.
Yeah,
and
I
some
remember,
people are
like,
faster
at math.
Yeah.
So if some people are faster at math, they can read. If some people are faster at reading, they can spend their extra time on
math. Yeah, and that was the thing about taking the ACT was I'm a slower reader. And so I wasn't being – when I was taking this ACT, there was never the question – there was never the judgment of whether or not I could do these questions because I knew I could do these questions.
It was whether I could do them in time.
Was if I could do them in time, which frankly didn't quantify how intelligent I was. It didn't quantify
That's
how much
I
knew.
That's what
I
like about college, though. Like, how our finals are set up to be 3 hours, even though the actual exams only take about an hour and a half for the most part.
Yeah.
So professors are basically saying, you can't use time as an excuse to not have done well.
Yeah.
And, like, that's what I've never understood about the SATs, because, like... Clearly, if you read something, I mean, how is that a test of intelligence? But then again, I suppose that's also there to see if your reading skills are up to, like, college level or not.
Because you do have to read a lot in college.
Yeah. So I suppose maybe that's the reasoning behind it. But, like, I've never really understood it. And, like, I remember going through the critical reading section, and I used to read the questions first, so I knew, and I used to sit there with a highlighter, like, at... highlighting the
answer. And,
answers,
like, as soon as I found the
answer. So, like, I wouldn't even read the thing before, like, first. I would look at the questions first. And how are you learning that way? How is it a test of your intelligence more so than just a way, like, how quickly can you find answers?
Yeah.
Like, quick doesn't equate to, like, you know,
intelligence
or, like, even
quantity versus quality,
pretty much. Yeah.
Okay, last thing that I do want to talk about, though, and I want to know both of your opinions on this. Oklahoma just is passing a bill that's revoking licenses from doctors who perform abortions. It hasn't been signed yet or made into a law yet, but the Oklahoma, like, Senate or whatever the... What are the state, like...
State Senate.
Okay, yeah.
State Congress.
Yeah, they passed it or... So, doctors in Oklahoma...
Well, I mean, are abortion clinics not allowed in Oklahoma?
No, doctors who can perform abortion, they're targeting doctors
That's
directly.
Discrimination, though.
It is, and a lot of, like, federal people are saying that it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, it is unconstitutional. You can't take licenses off based off of...
This is a nationally it's abortion has already been allowed on the national level.
Yeah, it's federally legal, so I mean they can't revoke
licenses. I'm not sure how medical licenses work. I'm pretty sure it's a national license and like not like a
no, it's
like,
a state by state.
It's state by
state.
Then if it's state by state, then they can do what they want.
Yeah, they can do whatever they
want. It's
but
like
they
a bar,
can't,
yeah.
They can't take it. It can they, even state laws can be can't
yeah,
be unconstitutional.
Yeah, this is a federal system. You can't. The states like don't supersede though.
Like federal laws aside, it's unconstitutional. You can't pass a law that's unconstitutional.
Are you going to argue with the Colorado
Oklahoma.
People smoking pot when it's federally banned, but statewide?
I'm
legal.
Not talking about federal banning. I'm talking about constitutionality. And on the
yeah, you okay, can't
me,
pass a
let
law.
Let me give you an example of California. So in California, there were these therapists who were like child therapists who had medical licenses who were doing at like these were they were doing anti-gay, you know, like gay and you know, pray the gay away kind of therapy.
Pray the gay away thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were doing those, and these were like pretty torturous thing that they were child therapists. So there were lots of protesters who were like, take their medical licenses away because this is not right. Mm-hmm. Because what they're doing is not right, considering homosexuality isn't a disease. And they couldn't take their licenses away on the basis of the fact that that would be discrimination, because they're not doing anything that's harmful per se. You can't argue that because the children, but then they also got into another conclusion that parents that
but children aren't
children cannot be forced to be taken there because they can't give consent to, like, you know,
therapy.
Yeah, therapy like that, like especially that sort of therapy that could have adverse effects. So it was kind of on the parents rather than on the doctors. You couldn't take their licenses away.
Yeah, so they didn't take their licenses away
because
there
was
no there was no evidence of harm being done.
There was no
I mean, how do you argue that with abortion?
There was psychological harm. That was being argued.
But you can easily you can easily argue that there's harm being done in an abortion.
Because there's no technical disease here. Like, you're not performing an abortion because there's something wrong with the mother or something wrong with the fetus. So it's not a disease.
No, but abortion, it is, no. Like,
I mean, I realize it's unconstitutional.
It's unconstitutional on the basis of the fact that since it's a medical practice, right, and it's not technically harming anyone, so there's still it's not malpractice.
You can say it's malpractice. This is the point I'm trying to make. If you are a lawmaker, and if you have the frankly subjective idea of abortion being morally abhorrent, you can say that they are performing malpractice, just like someone who's performing euthanasia on a patient, just like someone who's intentionally murdering a patient using their medical license and their medical practice.
I think that's one of the biggest problems with these abortion laws is what is a human life
comes into question. This is the biggest issue. What constitutes human life? And, you know,
and can people
does it include consciousness? Does it include a heartbeat?
And is there a hierarchy of like what one life is worth to another?
Yeah.
Is the child's life worth less than the mother's?
It's not a child though. Arguably it's a fetus.
And the living human thing.
Oh, it's not or a zygote even, like, I mean,
yeah.
Even at an earlier stage.
But then there's the issue of what stage. What you're arguing is a whole different.
Yeah, that's the entire thing that the human life needs to be.
And how do you say that? Okay, this life isn't real until 5 months, so you can get it aborted until then. But month 6, it's a real life, so no more abortion.
Yeah, I realize that you're creating a hierarchy there, but in terms of law, you can't leave that much up to the discretion of the judges. You do need to make a set definition of what constitutes life, even as harsh as that is.
Considering
all the debate that comes up, there needs to be a medical and a philosophical slash, like, all sorts of...
I mean, the law is very philosophical.
All theology considered what constitutes
human life. And what is human existence? Can we, like...
Yeah.
Can one person decide to end the life of this other living thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a
that
pretty...
That they are nurturing or, like, don't even...
Loaded question. Like,
it is a loaded question. And, like, the euthanasia question is the same, that... should you be allowed to end your own life, considering suicide is illegal, technically?
Is suicide illegal?
Suicide is illegal.
What happens to...
Okay, I mean, you die, but it's not...
Legal,
yeah. It's not legal.
Yeah, I suppose, like, euthanasia is another topic for another day or semester, but... Well, that was a way to end, you know... Existential questions is one way to end a radio show.
Can you expect anything better from a liberal arts college?
Well, yes.
All right. Well, we've been Bishops in the Bottle, and as the last, you know, episode, I'd like to remind everyone that this is all for just the sake of debate and for the sake of, you know, enriching
discussions
of the two people that listen to us and the three of us that are involved in this.
Yeah, it's for discourse's sake, and these are necessarily opinions of the university or anything that we particularly support. Yeah. So,
and we will be back next semester, hopefully, all things considered.
Yep.
So tune in again in August sometime.
Thank you for listening to us, and thank you for joining us for this entire semester. I'm Shamaita Rahman, here with Scott Payne and Irva Jarushi, and we're signing off for tonight.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.